Okay, well, shoot with your questions. So your question's more or less like that. By India, I became involved, and then because of, you know, seeing that life was not just sweet and happy at home, that raised a lot of questions in me. So from 13 to 17, I asked a lot of these kind of questions. What's the meaning of life? What are we doing it all for? And I was supposed to be my father's successor, and he wasn't happy. I remember when I was a kid, you know, my mother would say, "Shh, your father's coming home, and he has a headache." And I thought that she had some mystic power, because of how does she know he had a headache, you know? And he would come and he would have a headache, because he always had a headache, you know. That was every day he'd come home with a headache. And then I was supposed to be a successor. I thought, well, I don't know about that, you know. Do I have to have a headache?
How did that make you feel, that you had to be
a
successor? Did that put pressure on you to have to perform or to be the next?
Yeah, of course, you know, that put a lot of pressure on me. And because I saw that he wasn't happy, my motivation got lost, you know. And then I started looking for things, and then India seemed to be the place. At the time, there was a strong kind of message that spirituality, the East. And I went overland to India, came to the border of India, and there was this Sikh, you know, this Sardar with a big mustache and a turban, and he had his desk under a tree. So I said, this is far out. The desk is under a tree. But it made sense, you know, it was hot. So the desk under the tree. And then he says, why have you come to India? So I said, well, Father, India is a very spiritual country. And then he said that, very good. Then you must go to Benares. So since he was a customs officer, I said, yes, I will go. He said, yes, you will go, because I will buy you the ticket. Meet me at 6 on the station, and he bought me the ticket for the train. So that was quite impressive. Well, then on the train, everyone, you know, there was this husband and wife, and the wife was like practically serving and worshipping the husband. It was shocking to me. Then there was a Sikh in a blue shirt, you know, one of these holy Sikhs, sitting in a luggage rack, chanting Ram, 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 Ram. 1 hour, still going. 2 hours, still going. Third hour, Ram, Ram, Ram. Whoa, you know. Then there were Muslims that were like doing their namas, and then finally this old man comes and says, "Son, everything is in the hands of God." And I thought, boy, am I on the right train? maybe this one goes to heaven, you know? And he was like, it was incredible, so religious. So, you know, like, in the Netherlands is sort of a country, especially in the west around Amsterdam, you know, it's more business than religion that is in the foreground. And if there is something like religion, it's really like, sort of remote, you know. So the God question never comes so much to the foreground. But in India, you know, on that train, my God, you know, it was right in your face. It was just God, 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 you know. And it really asked me, well, do I actually believe or not? Like, you know, it sort of really brought it out. Because when I was young, my parents, they kind of taught me, they didn't want to force religion upon me. So they said, like, well, whether, you know, you want to worship God, it's entirely up to you.
But I'm only 6 years old. What do I know?
Yeah. Yeah, tell me, please. Because no, you don't want to force any religion on you. So I kind of then sort of put it on the shelf, you know. But in India, I took it off the question. I put the question off the shelf. And that was... and then, yeah, after a while. So I became kind of quite religious in India on that journey, which was the beginning of the whole spiritual search. So, you know, a lot of people see spirituality as one thing and religion as another. And I was one of those people. I didn't see the two necessarily connected. But in India, then I realized there's no spirituality without God consciousness. That's how it starts. If you want more, then 3 hours later. You know.
It's obviously very exalted philosophy. It's very high. And my understanding, my limited understanding of it, is that we are living in a very degraded, difficult age. So when people come into the temple and they listen to the philosophy, how does one understand such a high philosophy? Because when you start reading about Krishna and about God, it is extremely complicated.
Sure.
It's simple but complicated.
Sure.
So how do we...
Okay, according to the whole Vedic idea, you know, there are four ages, right? Satya Yug, Treta Yug, Kali Yug, Dwapara Yug, Kali Yug. In Satya Yug, all the people are very exalted, sages, saintly people. In Treta Yug, gradually it goes down. Human beings are not as exalted anymore. Dwapara Yug, it still goes down more. In Kali Yug, the current age, people are not of a high caliber. So what's happened is the standard for human life has gone down. And our mentality is a little bit animalistic compared to previous ages. In previous ages, we would have been animals. We would not have gotten human birth with our consciousness. But in Kali Yuga, in this age, human birth is given easily, even if you're not so qualified. So here we're walking around not very qualified. And everyone is weak in this age. Whether it is in the West or whether it's in India. In India also they say, you know, Swamiji, how do you follow all these things? We know all these things, but we cannot follow. How are you following? So it's the same thing. Weakness is there. So we are... that is the thing. The philosophy is simple. It's not so complicated, actually. But it's like we are weak, and you know, a standard of like. See, it all makes sense. No meat. Why? No meat, fish, or eggs. Why build your happiness on the suffering of others? What if I eat you? Do you like that? See? One may say, well, meat, I like meat, you know, it tastes good. So yeah, you taste good too, also. You know what I mean? No, I don't like that. Yeah? So this argument that tastes good is not a good argument, because you also taste good. If we cook you nicely, put some mushrooms and some sauce on top, you could be very tasty. Yeah? Absolutely. Yeah? So that's...
I completely agree, 100%.
Okay, but the point is, you understand the values.
Yeah.
So you can see the benefit of being a vegetarian. Okay, you know, like, leaving alcohol for medicinal purposes for a moment, I mean, alcohol at large has certainly created a bit of havoc in society. No one will deny that. So, what to speak of drugs, you know? I mean, you know, I don't know how it's in London. I know how it's in Amsterdam. And, you know, first of all, you always have a sign, there's nothing in this car, it's empty, so no need to break any glass. That's the standard sign in the car, right?
Yeah.
Nothing to take, you know. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Yeah. Do you want a cushion?
No.
It's okay.
Yeah. Some people like sitting on the floor. I like sofas. I have a sofa there. So far, so good. So, you know, you begin to recognize that the values in itself are good. Yeah, it's like it's like speaking out against free sex, right? Now, I'm from, you know, the 60s, 70s, when we broke all the taboos, right? And, you know, John Lennon sang for us, "Why don't we do it in the road?" And so on. So, we were breaking taboos. But what came of that wasn't always that beautiful. Right? So, gradually begin to also, you know, when I came home one day and my girlfriend told me that the vibrations between her and my best friend had just started up, you know, and then they both told me that they didn't need me, that I could go for a walk, could go for a hike, then I wasn't so happy. And then, as a result, I kicked over some garbage cans. And the cops were so fast. They had me within minutes, you know. I didn't realize the cops were that fast. They were fast. And then I spent the whole night in jail, you know. Meanwhile, thinking of my best friend, what he was doing to my girlfriend. You know? So at that stage, you know, I became a bit more conservative. The liberal morale from the 60s was not so, it didn't make so much sense anymore. So in that way, these principles of the Krishna conscious movement, they make sense. They're not just, you know, some conservative rules. I mean, they improve the quality of life. So it's not so difficult, Krishna consciousness. It's just difficult to follow because we have no discipline. But then by practice...
Do you think that a lot of people in the world get hurt, get rejected, get into very painful states of being, and then seek refuge in something?
It says that a first class person can learn by hearing. Second class person learns after frustrating experience. Third class person never learns. Yeah. So
I'll just find that out.
First is learn by hearing. Second, learn by experience, you know, by frustration. And third class never learns. So
I'm in the third class.
Definitely. Yeah, you may be, but I wasn't. I wasn't first class.
No, I'm bad. I said bad.
Anyway, I had to definitely be thoroughly frustrated first, you know, and suffer like you described. Right? And after that, then it's okay. I don't want these things anymore. Now I want something better.
If you were third class, you wouldn't hear. That's why you're here.
Yeah, because I got frustrated.
Yeah.
We've all been frustrated in that at times, haven't we?
Of course, yes.
Even if you do feel like you're on a spiritual path, it can still happen to you.
Yes, it does. But then, again, you want to... you want the spiritual path to be something better, you know, something that goes beyond compromise. So that's why I looked everywhere. I was with the Tibetans, and I was like all these young people, like they're already doing various meditations. I was in so many ashrams, but there's always compromise, you know.
Were you with Buddhist monks then?
Some in India. So many places. The Dalai Lama.
You hung out with Dalai Lama?
Yep. With Dalai Lama.
Does he eat meat?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, well,
it could be false.
I saw the monks in front of the butcher shop, and actually I talked to them. And I said, I thought Buddhists were like vegetarian and would eat meat. He said, no. We can eat meat. When we eat the meat, then that animal gets liberation.
It's already been liberated from its life.
Anyway, that was not nice. So I was trying out this, I was checking out this, checking out that, but I didn't see the commitment. I didn't see the, and I must say, with the devotees, the commitment was a bit too much, you know? It's like everywhere else I saw a lack of commitment, then the Hare Krishnas, that was a bit too much commitment, you know? But eventually I sort of up a few detours I came to. You know, I was in India and I checked out so many ashrams and also checked out the Hare Krishna temple. And I was in the temple for a little while and then I escaped. While all the devotees were in the temple, go I went out the back door. But then, eventually I went back to the mountains, and I got sick, and I went to this Tibetan doctor, and there was someone in the waiting room who was yellow like a banana. And I thought, boy, I hope I don't get that. But the only empty seat was next to that person. And I had rubber legs, you know. I had dysentery. I had to sit down. I sat down. And boy, 2 weeks later, I was young.
What was that, typhoid?
No, it was severe typhoid.
Hepatitis C.
And it was knocked out for quite a while. So that was good for me. Because I couldn't do anything after that.
Did you just need to rest for a very long time?
I needed to rest, and I had to give up all my bad habits, and so on.
Yeah. Served a purpose in a way.
Served a purpose, and after I had to make a new start. And that's what I thought, maybe let me try out the Hare Krishnas. Vishwami, you could sit on somebody's lap.
Yes. So when someone comes in, they see the values and they see the devotees and they get attracted.
Yes.
Krishna consciousness perhaps. And then they have to make the leap to understand Krishna.
Yes.
Which is for someone who is not, you know, from Indian body or whatever.
Yeah.
They look at Krishna and Krishna looks very exotic.
Very exotic.
Krishna's doing all kinds of stuff. And how do they then recognize that he is Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Yeah, it takes some time. That's why you don't begin with that, you know, generally speaking. You don't, on the first occasion, you say, you know, do you accept Krishna? He's God, you know. I mean, maybe that's a bit much for people all at once, you know. And God is blue. Then people ask you, why is he blue? It's very nice. No, he's blue because he's actually the color of a blackish bluish rain cloud. You know, like the monsoon clouds, they come when the sun is really bright. And then they cover the sky, but the sun shines through the clouds. The cloud is dark, turns blue, not a rainbow. The cloud is blackish, but gets the blue reflection from the sky, and is effulgent. That's the color of Krishna. And why he has a color? Because he's a person. That's why. Anyway, so it takes time to get on board with these things. So we start with values. Then again, you know, when you really like sort of a little bit exhausted with material life, which plenty of people are in the West, you know, you've tried so many things, just not satisfied, then it's amazing how quick one can accept. Quite quick. And then there's Prabhupada. And he's sort of like we find out about Prabhupada, then we find out what an amazing devotee he is, and then because of Prabhupada, he's like the shortcut. If Prabhupada says we didn't go to the moon, okay, we didn't go to the moon. If he says the moon is made of cream cheese, all right, made of cream cheese. Because we trust him. So if you start trusting someone, a spiritual teacher, then it becomes much easier. But yeah, then you don't want to see contradictions. Then if you see a Buddhist who sort of takes meat, then you think, how is this possible? Because ahimsa, no? Non-violence. So how does this rhyme? Then you have doubt. But when the teacher is pure, then faith develops very quickly.
How do we know that the teacher is pure?
Well, you know, like in the beginning you don't, but when you look at what he is presenting and how he's presenting himself, then gradually it begins to make sense. For example, Prabhupada. Prabhupada would always say that he had no credit. All it's God. You don't worship me, worship God, right? Okay, whatever you give to me, I accept that on behalf of God and pass it on. So that helped, and he showed real humility, he showed great tolerance, he showed honesty, he showed time for people, and he showed that he was very selfless, right? And would selflessly work for the benefit of others. So if you study Prabhupada's life, you read about Prabhupada's life, then he has all the makings of a saintly person. Because you see that the total sacrifice, that spirit of sacrifice, of self-interest, all for the benefit of others. Then whatever he says, he points back at scripture. And he points back that he's like the, And whatever he does, he says, I'm doing this because it says in this scripture that it must be done. And, you know, and it gives these and these benefits, and these are the reasons, so he explains it logically as well. So then in the end, get a full package, and then the package begins to make sense. You see? And he's the example. So then you can develop some trust.
Many of us who are practicing spirituality and Krishna consciousness, we want to share it with others. I just feel that now because of all of this like terrorism, at least at its height, that I'm wondering, what do people think in general of? Is this terrorism increasing atheism or are people it's looking at us as the same? Or
I was on an airport some years back, and suddenly this man behind me goes like, and you are a religious fanatic. You're just like Al-Qaeda, you know? You're a religious terrorist. And he begins to, like, rant, you know? He stands behind me and just goes on and on, you know? So, tolerate for a while, you know, because what do you do with people like that, right? And so I first tried to ignore him, but it didn't work. He was just going on. So finally, I asked him, sir, could you please stop terrorizing me? And then, like, people appreciated that. You know? So I got the people on my side. You know? Some people said, yeah, leave him alone, you know. Leave him alone. Right? So that was good. Then another situation I heard. I was on this flight from Canada to New York. And there's a man, he sits next to me, businessman, you know, so, and he goes like, I had a dream. I said, brother, tell me all about it. I had a dream. I had a dream where the whole world lives in peace. And everyone is just all together. I said, wow, that's a wonderful dream, brother. That's a wonderful dream. And then he says, you know, yes, I had a dream of a world without religion. I go, okay, well, you know, what does that do for me, you know? It's like, I mean, I've been in this for like, you know, so many years, it's hard to change now, you know, like it's just like, I just, it's my life, you know, I invested everything in this, right? What do I do now? So I said, how do I fit in your world? You know, it's hard for me, it's going to be hard for me to change. Then he looked at me in a serious, gave me a serious look, so, and sort of said, you are a problem. Like, okay. So, you know, there are some people out there who really like, phew, that may not appreciate what we're doing, but, well, there are many people who do appreciate what we're doing, and those are the ones that I care about, the ones that, you know, the sour faces, okay, too bad. Someone sees your clothes and goes, sorry, you know. Heavy's in the laundry. Only had the bed sheets left, ladies. What am I supposed to say now? No, you can't please everybody. You know, it's just. But you know, it's like the second time this week that I'm quoting the Beatles of all people. You know, but there's this song, you know, from Sgt. Pepper's, and there's a line which says, "It doesn't matter whether I'm wrong or right. Where I belong, I'm right. Where I belong." And you know, I liked that in the sense that you have people you belong with. You know. So let's be with the ones, let's not argue, is this right, is it not right? We find the people we belong with, who like this. Okay, nice. And we'll have a good time together. And the other guys, you know, sour grapes. Yeah. What to do? Of course, when they start coming in the door and the guns to come and take us away, then.
Yes, beloved, I was saying, in that mood, everything about God glory and every sanctioned by God. So what, how much karma has got to play with if people got killed by a terrorist? Is it part of their karma? Is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. This whole terrorist business, yeah, sure. Yeah. That's karma, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ask about the people that did the
acts
that killed the people, or the people that...
Yeah, well, they're the instrument, the terrorist instrument. I'd say they're instrument in God's hands. They're meant to die like that. Because of the karma.
Yeah.
Because they offend someone in the past.
So, you know, the victims, yes, I mean, there must be a reason for it, right? Why something happens to someone.
Yeah.
So that is karma. There are reactions, and when things happen to us, we take it like that. You know, these are reactions for things that happened in the past. I mean, it's not so alien. The Bible says also, as you sow, you will reap. So that's karma. As you sow, you will reap. That's karma. That's basically the principle of karma. Still, we see that, like, recently in France, the whole world is sort of looking at the atrocities, right, that are happening, and terrorism is fresh in people's minds. So it doesn't justify it, you know. It doesn't... The ones who killed these people, it doesn't justify. Say, well, it was their karma anyway, so it had to happen. So, you know, there's nothing wrong if you killed them, because actually, you know, they had it coming, you know, by their karma. No. The ones who did that created some new karma for themselves. So they are, funny enough, an instrument of the person's karma to give them a reaction for some sinful activities in the past. But they themselves committed great sinful activities by killing these people, and will have to suffer for them.
Yeah, part of God's glory, I guess, if you look at the big picture.
Yeah, and then in the name of God, you know, so many atrocities are performed. And that's where the man on the plane came from, a world without religion. That in the name of religion, in the name of God, you know, so many things are done, have been done in the history of the world.
They're quite often in the name of prophets and not even God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah. Yeah, but sometimes in the name of God also, in the name of prophets.
Yeah.
things like major diseases like cancer.
Major diseases?
Yeah, like cancer and HIV and AIDS. Are they, so they're not punishments from God?
They're also punishments. They're karma, they're punishments. They're punishments.
Could we not say that they're like learning lessons?
Of course. You know, and yeah, there's lessons in everything. Life is just a big, big learning curve. Anyway, there are two sides to the world, obviously, the heavy side and the sweet side. And, I think, besides these things happening, if we have a positive attitude, right, then also these things don't come so much into our life. Positive attitude is not just about, like, you know, try to be say nice things, you know, but positive attitude really means that, yeah, that we include the happiness of others in along with our happiness, you know, not my happiness at the expense of yours. Too bad. You're the loser. And that's not a... It's your power. It's your power, baby. We're sitting on the sofa. It's your karma that you're on the floor. Yeah. Don't feel bad about it, although part of your body may feel it's a bit hard. It's just your karma.
It's the karma we have to hear, beloved. Yeah. Time, place, and circumstances is also a karma.
Yeah.
So we're blessed.
We're blessed. Yeah.
Is that like...
But then the funny thing is, sorry, yeah, the funny thing is that the people that sit on the sofas, they have to do yoga to be fit, and then I have to sit on the floor.
Yeah, in a comfortable
stretch.
Yeah. Do you do yoga?
Yeah, not every day, to admit.
What kind of yoga do you do? Special kind of yoga?
I do a few stretches here and there. Stretches that are
kind Kundalini?
No.
No?
No. No, no, that's too hyped up. I need something relaxing because I'm already a driven person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I need to do the opposite and slow down.
Kapha.
Something very relaxing. Lately I'm trying yin yoga.
Mm.
Some yoga teacher can very good for you.
Today is an auspicious day. They're flying kites in India. So what's the actual symbolism, actually flying the kites with the auspicious day today?
Mm. Flying kites, huh? Yes. It's like... Yeah, yesterday was Makar Sankranti, the sun started to move into the northern hemisphere. So that's very auspicious for the northern hemisphere. So we're celebrating. I was celebrating. And so it's relating to the sun. And yeah, behind the sun, of course, we see the Supreme Light. But yeah, spiritual life is meant to be connected to nature. Really. I mean, you can practice, you know, you can practice Krishna consciousness in the middle of downtown, right? But ultimately, it's meant to take us back to nature. Right? And so also appreciate the sun. It's like, which, by the way, I said to him that I was going to go out and sing and dance in the streets, which I'm going to do, because it's sun is shining. It's England, and it's almost.
You have to take every opportunity.
It's sinful, you know, to stay indoors when the sun shines, isn't it? It's like, how can you do that, you know? So, we should sort of take one last question. Let's see. You had one, yeah. But if you. Let's see. Who is the most eager?
No, I mean.
No, no, please go ahead.
Oh, okay. Good.
That's the same question.
Who's the most eager and who's the most polite?
Who's got the best question? I was just going to ask if devotees can pray to Krishna for material things. So, for instance, a devotee might pray to Krishna, please help me get a job so then I can concentrate and I can do this.
Sometimes, maybe, but if you're more advanced, you just leave it up to them. But here we are struggling like anything, trying to have a spiritual life, and materially it's like all upside down, makes it very difficult, and then we may sometimes help Krishna. Please make it a little easier so that I can. Sometimes, Krishna, help. I'm going under the waves now, please. So, when we're under too much pressure, then we can ask for some help. The aim is spiritual. So it's not black and white. Yes, no.
No, I was just wondering, if you don't ask Krishna, Krishna might...
Might forget. He's quite forgetful. but I heard he went electronic.
It's probably an app for
him. Yeah, it's got an app that sends him reminders. You know? That's not easy, you know, when you're bored. There's a lot of things on your mind. Yeah. It's just all these people and all the things. So, you know, beyond that. No, Krishna doesn't forget.
No.
So therefore we know that whatever we need, he knows it. And he knows better what we really need. So we just trust him. Still no job. Weight loss continuing, you know. As you like.
I was just wondering if you just actually turn to Krishna, something might happen.
Krishna, yeah. I mean, how about a job, Krishna? Yeah. I take your question also.
So,
why
we are doing wrong things?
Why are we doing wrong things?
Even though we know that to do that is wrong, but keep doing them.
Sure. Because we're not satisfied with the right things. See? It's like, we are not not sufficiently deep spiritually, and therefore spiritual life doesn't satisfy us, and we start to look for the material also. Then the material, it's like you try this, you try that, and still not satisfied. Try a little more. And then, you know, you just step over this line, bam. The mind wants to be free, right? Unrestricted. Just run free. You know, like the old song used to get you moving, but born to be wild. Easy rider. It's a bit old now, I know, but it's good. Anyway, so you understand the point is that the desire to be free, but actual freedom doesn't exist on the bodily platform. Freedom comes in love, only there. Only there can we be free, and that means ultimately love of God, love of all. Only then are you free, otherwise you're never free. So lust, the desire to enjoy this world, is what's driving us.
And
the
desire for recognition, for fame, it all comes in lust, yes?
All comes in lust. Whole body was. It's about me.
Ego.
Ego. Me. Ah. Capital I, excuse me. Not just I, capital I. If you don't mind, true. Ego. Big ego. Well, before the sun goes down and the stars come up, we'd better go out in the street, isn't it? So whoever wants to come on the high man is most welcome, whoever has other things to do, such as life. Who has other things to do, right?
Fire.